Welcome to episode 116 of the Atomic-Powered Supercast, with your hosts, Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, our topic is Powers by Brian Michael Bendis. And now, the show begins. Okay, everybody, welcome to another sharky episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
And Jen.
Hey.
And this week we read Powers, Volume 1, to start off our Brian Michael Bendis arc, a.k.a. Bend It Like Brian Michael. What was the other one? Get Bendy?
Get Bendy.
Get Bendy. I don't know where that one came from.
Why is this episode sharky?
Because the 0.5 number episode was the guy was the shark.
Oh, right. That's right.
The hero, in finger quotes.
Well, so he was just trying to get back in his game. In the game,
he did not mean to kill that man.
He slipped, bro.
He's a shitty hero.
He's really sad looking.
Well, like, okay. So we read issue 0 to 6. I don't know. It's weird because we ran into this problem, right? Like, I went and found volume 1, and it's only issue 0 to 4. But I got to the end of issue 4, and it was like, what the fuck? That's where the story ends. Huh. So I think you guys read 5 and 6 to finish up the...
Yeah,
the
I mean, I was like, I'm not going to not finish this story arc. Yeah.
I looked it up on Amazon to check, because I do that for everything we read.
But on Amazon, it's 1 to 4, isn't it?
It says 1 to 6.
Really?
And then 7 is like special, and the next trade picks up at 8.
What the fuck, when did I find that was 1 to 4? I don't know. Anyway, it was art by art by Michael Avon Umig. Umig. I don't know.
We're bad at names.
Yeah, pretty much. But yeah, I really like the half issue to start it off. Like, it does a good job of setting the tone.
Yeah.
It's
flavorful.
And I like the idea of, like, the average Joe superhero not knowing how the fuck those other guys keep up appearances all the time. Like, seriously, part of being Superman isn't just being strong and punching stuff and being a good hero, but it's like, you gotta be out there every day. Like, the guy can't take a day off.
Yeah.
Like, the shark just wants to take a break. And then come back to it later.
So what did we think about the main story?
The Retro Girl?
Who killed Retro Girl?
Yeah.
So, I don't know, are we satisfied? Well, you didn't get the resolution.
No, I didn't. All I got was, oh shit, he was a hero! End. I was like, well, what happened to Retro Girl? It's the whole point of the thing.
Well, what did you think, David? Are you satisfied with Retro Girl's killer?
Am I satisfied with it?
I don't know. Like, is he... Or would you rather it be, like, a supervillain, I guess?
Because it was an average Joe, right?
It was a crazy dude.
Well, he was like a... I wouldn't say he's, like... He's a crazy person, definitely.
Yeah.
And he went on the internet and built one of those power nullifiers like they have in the interrogation rooms. And he, like, shot it at her and she fell out of the sky, basically.
Oh, it's just the falling out of the sky killed her?
Well, I think she got her throat slit.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, like, I kind of liked that it was for once not anything big or special or super that killed a superhero. It was just some random crazy dude. Because you think that would happen all the time.
Yeah. And, you know, it makes sense for the tone of the story, too. Because the whole tone of the story is like this semi-noir, semi-not kind of just detective story, and it's really gritty street level story writing. So it would be weird if you get all this street level gritty story writing and then it ends with like, oh, she got punched super hard by Doomsday and broke her neck and then the knuckle bone thing slashed her throat. Like, if it were something crazy.
Well, yeah, that would be horrible for this story, because so let's say that it is Doomsday,
sure,
somehow, right? And Walker and Dina Pilgrim figured out. They're like, oh, it's Doomsday. It's like, what do? They don't go arrest Doomsday.
Yeah, that's kind of not possible.
They're going to have to call a superhero to go punch him back. And then they're like, what was the point of them doing anything? So I think it has to be something like this. I think eventually, I mean, I've only read these first 6 issues. I think at some point they will probably have some situation where superheroes will have to be called in, but I think as far as starting it goes, it goes a little bit further than just what issues 0.5 did in setting the the tone of this comic. It's like, okay, it's like if we had a comic about Commissioner Gordon only, right? Because Batman can't be everywhere at once,
yeah.
Theoretically. And it's not as if the villains take turns, right? It's like Joker gets Mondays and Penguin is Tuesdays.
It'd be great if they had a calendar that circulated.
That's what Calendar Man's for, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh my god, perfect.
But I mean, you see what I mean? Like, crimes happen, and superheroes can't solve all the crimes. There just aren't enough superheroes.
Yeah. And at a certain point, you get to what I kind of think of in my head as, like, the MMO problem. Like, I don't know if I'm the only one that thinks this, but, like, if you ever play a big MMO, like, especially World of Warcraft, I think is the worst, right? Like, you get to the end of, like, level 60 or, like, the vanilla content, and you have to, like, go destroy this whole, like, clear out this infestation of evil dudes in this place, and you're like, some high-level guy could just come down and do it in a second. Like, why do you, like, it seems like somebody much more powerful can do it in a lot less time and more efficiently than I could do it, so why the fuck am I the one doing it? So it feels a lot like that problem to me where it's like, well, you can't do that because the level 90 guys are all needed up doing their thing. Like, there's right. a tier structure to it that makes kind of sense if you suspend disbelief. Like, Batman can't be out catching purse snatchers. He's busy defeating the Joker. So you still need people to go out and get the purse snatchers or get Killer Croc on a bad day. Or, like we said for the Christmas special, Clayface on a bad day.
Right.
Came to get taken down by Harvey Bullock.
Well, that, and it's like, I mean, this is a comic about two police detectives. Batman is outside of the law, and allowing him to operate just on his own, being like, you know, I'm gonna do what Batman does, that leads to chaos and kind of probably really bad things happening. Whereas here you have a procedure, you have a means of justice, and it's interesting too because a superhero comes in and interrupts justice at the end when Trip Hammer
mm-hmm.
avenges Retro Girl's death by killing the weird crazy guy. It's like, you know, I kind of feel like a point to it was that you can have a system and justice, or you can have people outside the system who also do good things, but not necessarily always
the right thing, just yeah. good thing. Yeah. So Trip Hammer went and killed the crazy person.
Yeah, they were, like, escorting him from the police station to the jail.
Okay.
And Trip Hammer, like, busted the ceiling in and, like, fried the guy with flamethrowers.
Holy shit. So was it, like, on Trip Hammer's part, was it just an act of vengeance, or was it
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well, I know, but, like, was there any shade of, like...
It's actually kind of, you know how...
Are you asking if he, like, felt bad about it?
No, because you get the sense, I don't know, when I was reading the scenes with Trip Hammer, he seemed almost to go out of his way to talk about how how Retro Girl was just some girl that he was fucking, and that he didn't have any genuine feelings for her. Was there no shade of, like, it felt to me like he was trying extra hard to prove that he didn't feel for her at all.
Well, he thought he was, so I pulled the page up. He actually says, I did what must be done to end this with honor.
I mean, you know, there's that argument that if there's a serial killer or something, you shouldn't feature them on the media because it just glorifies them. He makes that point and says, I don't want this guy becoming a martyr or a star or anything. I don't want him getting what he wants. So I guess, you know, that is kind of a deeper form of vengeance. You not only kill the guy, you interrupt his plans for fame.
Right, so if this guy, like Jen said, if this guy hadn't been killed, he would have been in the news on CNN. Everybody would know who this guy is. And he would be known as the guy who killed Retro Girl, mm-hmm. right? Now he's a stain in the police parking lot. Nobody knows who he is.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter now. There's not going to be the trial. Whatever
he could have had, it's irrelevant.
Yeah. He's dead now. And so, for Trip Hammer, that's closure and justice. It's, like, the crazy guy thought that by killing Retro Girl in her prime, he was preserving her for future generations, like giving some beautiful memory. Like, it's kind of like Watchmen in a certain way, right? Like, Watchmen takes place when a lot of the heroes are past their prime,
mm-hmm.
right? And they're no longer glamour. It's not glamorous to be a superhero anymore. And so people like the comedian especially is like this sad, kind of pathetic dude, right?
Yeah.
So this, I don't remember if they mentioned his name, but the guy who killed Retro Girl, like, he doesn't want that to happen to her, so he kills her in her prime. But to Trip Hammer, that, you know, that's not the right way for a superhero to go out.
Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah. And I mean, like, he may have said, oh, she was a bad lay, but I think it was fairly clear that they were friends. Like, that he appreciated her. Because, I mean, at some point, Pilgrim is like, wait, you said she was such and such. And he goes, no, I said that she was bad in bed. I didn't say anything else negative about her. I liked her.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that point. He was like, no, no, I just said that she wasn't good at sex. I didn't say that she was a bad person or she deserved anything.
Yeah.
So what do we think about the dynamic between Christian Walker and Dina Pilgrim?
She needs to calm her shit down.
Yeah, she's like a fangirl, it seems like, of superheroes.
Well, yeah, she requested the transfer.
Well,
yeah.
She's so nosy, and it's like, okay, you're not supposed to keep secrets from your partner. What about when you just met them yesterday? You don't spill your life story.
Yeah, but I don't know. I go back and forth on that in my head. Because, I mean, she's a detective, right? If you're a good detective, you have to be naturally inquisitive, don't you?
At the same time, you're allowed to respect boundaries when you know the other person's not doing anything wrong.
Right. I think it's one thing to be inquisitive and have good follow-through as a detective, right? So that's what her job is to find information. But she's not being a detective when she's talking to her partner. She's being a partner. And when he says, you know, I think... when he says, like, back off, she should respect that, right?
Yeah.
Because her knowing all his secrets is not necessarily necessary to do her job.
No, it's not. And she did ask him... I don't remember. She was like, were you a hero once? I thought it seemed like you knew Retro Girl, all this kind of stuff. And he stopped her and he was like, listen, if I knew her full name, like, I knew her first name, we hung out. But if, because we, you know, this is the circle, this is the beat that I get, I know these people, I see them a lot. But he was like, if you don't think if I knew her last name, we wouldn't be following those leads too, then you're fucking crazy. You know?
That's totally fair.
Yeah.
Because it's like, what bothers me is maybe if they had been partners for 20 years, she would have an argument like, why did you never tell me I trusted you in my life? This was relevant to some of our cases, maybe. But no, she comes in out of nowhere and she's like, I requested to be transferred here to stalk you. Now I'm going to stalk you real hard. And it's like, don't do that. It's creepy.
I don't know, was it necessarily for him? It seems like she was just like a superhero fangirl.
Well, she said like she requested to be directly under Christian Walker. So I'm under the impression maybe that was in part because of his fame as a detective.
Huh.
Yeah, I don't think she knew that he was a superhero before this. I think she just started putting it together as they were interacting with different people like Zora and Trip Hammer.
Yeah.
And even the villains, like, all knew who he was, too. But I don't think it's the same relationship when he was with the heroes. I think the villains know him because he's a
cop. Detective. And he's good at that job. No, I think she transferred to this, like... was this specifically said to have set in New York City? Does it ever say what city this is in?
No, she just asked for New York-style pizza at one point.
Okay. Because I'm just guessing, like, if you're in the Marvel Universe, right? And you've got a hard-on for superheroes. Like, and you're a detective, you would want to, like, request a transfer to New York City. Not like Topeka. I don't know what superheroes are in Topeka in the Marvel Universe, but it's nowhere near as much as New York City. And like, if you want to do those superhero cases, like, that's where you would want to transfer to.
So, one thing that I need clarifying on, is this in the Marvel Universe?
No,
because it doesn't seem like it is. Because they have, like, the cameo with Thor.
Well, there's a guy that looks like Savage Dragon, too.
Yeah, but some...
I thought this was Image. Wasn't this Image?
Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah, it's Image. So it makes sense that Savage Dragon would be in it.
Yeah.
It actually transferred to Marvel later in, I think.
Oh.
Well, there's Madman also. Right there.
Oh, yeah, with the exclamation...
Yeah, I don't think that's Thor. I think he's just generic blonde
Thunder
guy.
Dude.
Someone in some notes somewhere mentioned, like, an homage to some of the Marvel characters, so I wasn't quite sure what was going on, but...
Yeah, some of these have become such generic tropes. Like, I think I saw a Cat Lady one, which is, like... in everyone, there's Black Cat, Catwoman, all kinds of stuff.
So, I do kind of have a bone to pick about the editing here, let's say. Like, I feel like it's well written. I feel like it's under-edited in both, like, a microscopic sense and a macro sense. Because, okay, one thing that gets me is they keep saying such and such hold up somewhere. He hold up in the building. Or he hold himself up in the building. Every time it was spelled hold, like, to hold. And it was some... just, like, this is a published work.
Yeah.
And I know, like, maybe lower budget, it's newer, but that drove me nuts. And there were typos other places.
Yeah.
But I don't know if you guys felt this way. I felt like Bendis's strength is in his pacing. Like, he knows when to stop, and that's really good. But then there were these pages with all this dialogue, and I was just kind of like, I need to get through this,
Yeah, it did feel like a slog sometimes. I think because... Maybe the reason it went this way is because they're like questioning a lot of people. There's a lot of interrogation going on. And interrogation is something that it's hard to show than tell with that kind of thing, because it's a tense interaction of people talking. It's not like a standoff between people who are about to punch each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can't. It's harder to show the tension.
See, but that's.
I don't know. The
0.5 issue with the shark, that interrogation scene was awesome. The pacing in there was good. You get lots of character. They draw the information out, you know, and they do a lot of telling about the backstory, but, you know, you get a sense of these people from that scene, and the tension's good, and it feels right. But then you get other ones, like, in the actual volume, like 1 through 6, they're like, why would this need to be 3 pages of interrogation?
Well, I think because if it's contained in one issue, like 0.5 is, it's really easy to say, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is the goal of these 22 pages. So it's easier to pace that, like Jen said. But if you're going to draw, you have to draw it out over 6 issues, and there are going to be a bunch of different interrogations in there. So maybe, I don't know, I think it could have been dialed back. I don't know what they could have done instead, necessarily.
I feel like a good editor would have stepped in and said, like, whoa, this is going on too long. You need, like, some of this information was just not relevant. Some of the stuff I read here was like, I don't care, it doesn't add to the characters or the story. And it could have been cut. And
or even like a change of scenery. Like, not all interrogations have to happen in an interrogation room. Like, there's that classic scene of, like, the cop going into the bar where all the criminals hang out.
Yeah.
You know? Like, I don't remember seeing one of those scenes in here. All the interrogations happened in the interrogation room, which is procedure, which is right, which is the way it's quote-unquote supposed to be, but...
I just feel like there were definite places here where the editor could have said, you need to step back and let your story just tell itself a little, instead of, you know, it felt forced in places.
Yeah, and I also really agree with you on the typos. Like, when you see the really bad typos like that, or it's not even a typo so much as also just using the wrong word over and over, it kind of... I know it's like we're nitpicking, but it really does pull you out of the story.
Well, the thing is,
because you're like, why is that wrong? Ah. You stop thinking about the story, and you start thinking about the stupid little typo.
I imagine, like, a really uneducated person saying those things. Right? So, like, oh, he hold himself up in the building, and, the way it's phrased, I imagine just kind of this boorish person, but it doesn't fit with the character we're seeing.
Yeah.
Because you'd think Dina Pilgrim would know the difference between whole and hold.
Yeah. I don't know.
So it was a character problem for me. Like, I can accept, okay, you can't fix everything, but...
Yeah, and you gotta consider, there's a lot of people who get their hands on the text of a comic by the time it gets to print.
Yeah.
I mean, sure, Bendis could spell everything right, and the editor could clear everything Bendis writes perfectly fine, and then the letterer will fuck it up.
Yeah,
and
send it straight to the printer. Where that happens.
It's like, oh, god damn you, letterer.
But it affects how the characters come across to me, because I imagine a voice every time I see the words, so. I don't know.
So what did you guys think of some of the heroes in this, then? We get a good sense of Retro Girl, I think, from the TV special about her, which I think was kind of cool.
Yeah,
I was like running along the bottom. That was a neat mechanic. And then the other one we get a good glimpse of is Zora and Trip Hammer.
I thought Trip Hammer was really cool, because he's just like this gnarly old dude with an Iron Man suit. Why not?
No, and I liked him too, because I think he's what Tony Stark would be like in old age. Like, he was rich for most of his life, but now he doesn't have his company to worry about anymore. He mellows out and goes, like, hippie-ish almost.
Yeah.
Except he's a bit of a dick still.
I could see that. What about Zora? Have like the whole interview with her.
I thought the concept for her character was really cool. Like the fact that she she achieved her powers through any lack of spirituality.
And it, like, I love that it upset people. Like, there are parts in here, and especially actually in the next comic that we read, Alias, where Brian Michael Bendis is just like spot on about how a culture works and how cultures perceive certain things, especially our culture. Like, he just has a really good eye for that.
Yeah, if somebody were like that in the real world, they would be ostracized immediately.
Yeah.
Like, in the world of heroes and everything, like...
Or, like, just freaking imagine if someone got superpowers and they're like, it's because I had chose to abandon God. Like, the freaking Westboro Baptist Church would protest, and so would everyone else, and it's like, dude, superpowers, that's pretty cool, can't complain.
And it's like, it's exactly the opposite of how I think a lot of people in this country consider religious tolerance. A lot of people consolidate the idea of religious tolerance by saying, oh, everybody just worships the same God differently. You know, like, mm-hmm. Christians tend to say, oh, well, it's cool, we can be tolerant of Islamic people because they worship the same God under a different name, and the Jews worship the same God under a different name, and all this kind of other stuff. And like, yeah, even Hinduism, it's, you know, Krishna is just our Lord God under a different name, but like, this isn't that kind of tolerance. This is just like, no, there's no God. Like, that kind of tolerance won't fly here. That's actually not tolerant in this case.
Yeah, it's...
Well, she's a super atheist, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I think is also a cool spin on DC's trend for their heroes. Like, a lot of DC heroes, and a lot of Marvel heroes, too, are like incarnations or champions of gods or pantheons of gods. Like Wonder Woman, Dr. Fate, Thor... And this is cool because it's like, no, her powers don't come from God. They come from lack of any God whatsoever.
Well, she's the Ubermensch. If you realize you are ultimately your own power, you can harness that and do great things. And apparently it appears metaphysical in this case, too. So.
Yeah, but we didn't get a whole lot of personality about Retro Girl in this one. I think she's the analog for Wonder Woman kind of a thing.
I thought Superman.
Yeah, I thought she was more of a Superman.
Yeah.
Well, she has the generic power set, and she's, like, all-American, right?
That's true.
Too much smiling. I do like how she had a bit of a gritty side, that she's Boink and Trip Hammer, like, behind the scenes.
She's an adult.
Yeah, it's just, like, no one ever mentions that. You know that Superman has a wife, but at the same time, like, nothing ever gets carnal with him.
We just don't know.
We don't know, but it's specified here. And that's kind of like, hey, superheroes are people, too. Superman could be a eunuch, for all we know.
I don't know. I don't think Lois would go for that.
No, not definitely.
She's a...
She's a woman's woman?
Well, she's, like, very... She's fiery. You know what I mean? She's, like, she's always kind of sassy and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, really?
I just watched Superman vs. the Elite on Netflix.
Uh-huh.
And she's, like, all... There's all kinds of innuendo in it. And it's, like, a cartoon.
Yeah. I just want to egg you on to see how much more you can...
What do you want me to say?
I don't know.
Never mind.
Well, and then we had, Oh, crap. What's the name of the guy? The face pube guy.
I only remember
Cutter.
Them calling him.
Cutter, yes.
Okay.
Do we think anything about him? Other than he's, like, the generic antagonist in The Office?
He needs to get over himself.
He's just cool. He's a cool guy. So, I mean, like, cool. He thinks he's cool.
Hey, cool guy.
Yeah, he's a bro.
What really made me dislike him? At first I was like, oh, that guy's sad. He just wants to help and no one likes him. But then it was revealed that he got fired as Walker's partner for outing him as a superhero.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was kind of like, you know, maybe that whole taking over the case thing was a bit of vengeance.
I feel like that guy, if we read this run, he's going to be a bad guy eventually.
Yeah,
I like he'll come out as like a supervillain.
No, I think he'll turn into some kind of something bad, some hood rat stuff.
He'll obstruct justice. Friends.
Hood rat stuff. How is it still funny? That clip came out like 8 years ago, and we still fucking make jokes about it.
Because it's genuinely an excellent
line. That kid is fucking baller. It's still relevant. Well, I don't know about relevant. But yeah, it's like, at a certain point, wanting to be helpful is there, but the other thing is, like, it's not your case. Go do your own shit and stop obstructing us. Because then when Christian Walker and Dina Pilgrim go and, like, try to... When they're going and trying to do their case and get information, they're undermined by the fact that this other guy came first. Right? It gives whenever they go and interrogate somebody, it gives the villain the upper hand. Well, that they have information that they don't.
Cutters definitely seems to be a terrible cop.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And so I don't...
It makes you wonder how he became a detective, because that's, like, an earned rank, right?
Yeah.
You have to do something nice or impressive to get that?
I think, yeah, you have to be promoted up to it, right? I mean, I've never been a detective before.
I don't know, but
that's what TV tells me.
I was under the impression, like, it's a harder rank to get.
Is there anything interesting about the fact that they're named Christian Walker and Pilgrim?
I don't know yet. I don't think that's been revealed. If there is an undertone.
Or is it just that Dean is a sidekick?
Could be.
I don't know.
We should talk about the little girl.
Okay.
So you didn't read the last issue?
Nope.
She's the new Retro Girl.
Oh.
Basically, it turns out Retro Girl's thing is she's been reincarnated throughout time.
Yeah.
As various, like, powerful female figures like Joan of Arc or, I think, Cleopatra might have been.
Yeah, they mentioned
one.
Cleopatra, too.
And, after Retro Girl dies, or well, the little girl's like a big lead because she says, "What does Chaotic Chic mean?"
When she finds the, she's the one who catches him spraying painting it on the police building too.
Yeah,
because she like walks out of the daycare and is like, "Hey, look at that guy!"
And it's the perp.
Yeah,
because we're using terms like that now. So, in the end, she tells Walker that she had a dream about how the nice girl came to her and said it's all going to be okay now because they caught the guy, and not to worry because... And then she gave kind of the reincarnation story. And then at the end they actually showed like two figures at the memorial to Retro Girl. They were flying across the sky silhouetted against the moon, and I don't know if that's Walker and the little girl or two other people.
I think it's two other people because as far as we know, Walker doesn't have his powers anymore,
well,
right?
Well, he's still... wrong. He right. mentions that. So, like, it seems like he has some things. I don't know if he can fly or not. It's never said that he can't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. The woman flying across the moon seems too tall, though, to be a little girl.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially if that's Christian Walker.
Yeah.
See, in that page, which page is that? It's just before the funeral, right?
This is the second... This is the page right before the funeral in issue 6.
Like, that is a perfect example of why you need a better editor or a better letterer. Because that page is just a page dump of text.
Mm-hmm. The worst thing is that after that it follows two pages of no text. And I know that the no text is there because it's a silent vigil. And
yeah.
People are praying, it makes sense, but it's just like, space it out. You gotta space it out.
Well, the problem is when you get a page that you dump so much text on, the art can't do any movement of any kind.
Well, I mean, it's...
You change the medium of the comic. It stops becoming a comic and starts becoming, you know, like a page of short story with some art in the background.
There's no real art in that page either because it's two black silhouettes and then half of Walker's face.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, that's a perfect page. That's issue 6?
This is issue 6. Mm-hmm.
Issue 6, yeah. But I mean, did we like the art?
It was cool. It fit the noir. It really reminded me of Batman, what was it called? The mystery where Calendar Man's the...
Long Halloween?
The Long Halloween, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It's not Calendar Man, though.
Oh, no, it's not. They just suspect him because
yeah,
there's calendar
holidays.
Pages. Yeah.
But it's different. It's the Holiday Killer. Totally different.
Well, the Holiday Killer's not a crazy person in the same way that Calendar Man is. He's a vengeful mobster.
Yeah.
Mobster's son.
Didn't he kill his own mom? Anyway, that was a long time ago.
Batman! Alright, so the art.
I liked it.
It's cool.
I like it a lot more with the detectives, but it doesn't look or feel as natural with the heroes for some reason.
Yeah.
I think it's okay, though, because if you think of someone who's, like, closely associated with superhero art, like Jim Lee, right? His art is good because he showcases superheroes really well, right? But if he drew, like, Lieutenant Gordon, it's not going to be special necessarily,
yeah.
as opposed to somebody else. So it's not about the heroes in this comic. It's about tone and normal people. So you could draw a normal person, however. This art is almost like Bruce Timm art.
Yeah, I got a strong vibe of that as I was reading it.
But it's a little bit less detailed than his is.
I think Walker's character design is really well done. Because it's like, you know he's this big, strong, muscled man, but at the same time he looks kind of low-key. Like, there's nothing flashy about him. He's just mm-hmm. a dude with a big chin.
I mean, even compared to Dina Pilgrim, who has more outwardly visual, recognizable things about her character. Like, her haircut's recognizable, her shirts always have something on them. You know, he's just like, dress shirt and a black tie, and normal dude.
Mm-hmm. He's professional.
Yeah. Got a job to do, damn it.
And Pilgrim is, like, way more colorful than him, and that reflects her personality in a fairly literal sense, so. Did we want to rate it?
I don't know. How long were you running?
We're 40 minutes right now.
But yeah, but that includes, like, the 10 minutes of fucking around in the
beginning. Yeah, we're at, like, 30.
This is what happens when I don't have fucking access to my notes while I'm reading.
You could use this.
Hmm? No, I mean, like, when I was reading the comic, the internet was down at work, so I couldn't put in notes on the thing. I can't think of anything else to talk about, though.
I know. Well, let's talk about the universe building.
Okay.
So, one thing I did want to bring up was, if this isn't the Marvel Universe, which we established earlier, what do we think of it? Like, do you think he did enough of a job filling it out, or do we actually need to know anything about it?
I think this is a good starting point. I don't think it wouldn't be a good idea to just say, here's this place full of superheroes, and here's this team, and this team, and this other team. I think it's kind of like, it's similar to The Boys, right?
Mm-hmm.
In The Boys, we meet the main characters, and we meet the Seven in, like, the beginning, right?
Yeah.
And Trip Hammer and Retro Girl kind of feel like they're part of the, like, Seven / Avengers / Justice League type of team, right? They fit specific types of
general superhero tropes.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think it's cool. I mean, in issue 0.5 also we meet the Shark, who's like a D-list superhero, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's a good starting place. I don't think you want to give it away all at the beginning. We didn't really meet any villains. We only met that mobster guy.
The mobster guy and the guy who was in the prison.
Right.
Yeah.
The memory guy.
Yeah.
Oh, there's two villains in the prison. Kinda, right?
Yeah, who's the other one?
There's a guy he talked to first.
Yeah, crap, I don't remember his name though.
He just had like a really good memory or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember either, but he seemed okay, like
I was back and forth on the universe building. Like, on the one hand, I want to say I really liked it because Bendis isn't straight out saying, these are the Seven, this is their powers, this is what they do, blah, 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 and just laying it all out for you. Like, you're getting them revealed to you from a perspective that matters, right? Like, if you're shown the Seven, and, like, this is who they are, and this is why they're awesome, and they're the leaders of the superhero community and all this, blah, 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 then it's going to feel like a lot of the detective stuff is undermining that perspective. Sort of a thing. Like, if you see Zora being a normal person, slinging around personal names, you know, like, then you get, it's sort of like, it would feel like it's undermining that. But I don't think Bendis is out to undermine any of the sense of what these characters are supposed to be within this universe. It's just that this is how a detective will approach them. You know, and that's, like, as a detective, somebody who works with these people every day, it would be a very plain interaction between them, you know? There wouldn't be that same level of reverence, because, especially for Christian Walker, who is on their level or knew them in that way, you know, and they'll get to be like that, I think, with Dina Pilgrim too eventually,
we hope.
Yeah, fingers crossed. But it seems like the universe is built that way, in a way that matters. At the same time, it kind of, like, when we were looking at the page full of heroes and we saw Savage Dragon and Madman, when I read that in the comic, that kind of bugged me, because it sets those cues. Okay, this is in the Image comic universe, except there's this page of like 20 heroes and two of them are recognized and the other 18 I don't. The other 18 are just made up. So it's like, okay, is this part of the Image universe? I mean, where is then, like, what's Invincible? What is, like, some of the other big Image ones? Where's Spawn? Like, there's already this universe with these characters in it. And they're not represented here, but they kind of are. And the convenient one, like a cameo, it feels like it should be integrated, but it's not. And maybe it shouldn't be integrated, but there's these hints that it is.
I don't, aside from, like, the cameos of Savage Dragon and Mad Men, I don't get the notion that it's in that universe. I think those are more like nods or little winks at Image Comics.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm trying to say is those little winks pull me out. It's like, oh, okay, this is where we are, and then we don't see anybody else relevant ever again.
So we're not there.
Yeah, this is where we are, but wait, we're not there. And I don't know if it's an editorial decision saying, hey, throw in Savage Dragon, maybe we can sell a couple copies of Savage Dragon. I don't know if that's what it is or what, but
you wouldn't know who Savage Dragon is anyway unless you knew who he was, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah. Or maybe it's, or
it could just be reverence. Yeah. I mean, like, hey, I'm happy to be working with Image, and here's a wink and a nod.
I guess. I don't know, it's just the whole thing of this is where we are, but no, we're not really, and no.
The only thing I wish they elaborated on in this issue was just the public's general view of people with powers. Because it seems like really appreciative and nice, and there's Retro Girl, but, you know, things like this, like, half the time it seems nice, and then there's a bunch of weird racists around the corner who are like, you know, kill the muties or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying, like, I want to see that, I just... They had so much public exposure in the comic, like random people talking about superheroes. It would have been nice to hear opinions that didn't revolve only around Retro Girl. And you could have included that with, like, just one short sentence. I don't know. It was a neat universe. I like the perspective of it being just about normal people. Kind of.
Well, you guys want to go ahead and rate this?
Sure.
I think we're petering out. Let's go ahead and read it.
You go first.
Oh, crap. I'll go first. 3. I don't know. I like this. I really did. 3 doesn't feel like I'm doing it the justice that I think I should. But really, I think I want to read more of what's coming up than what I did read. I feel like the half issue one, the stuff with the shark, was really good. I really liked the tone, the feeling, the tension. And in that issue, I really loved the interplay between Pilgrim and Christian Walker. Like, in that one, you could tell they'd been partners for, like, a decade, you know? They knew each other. They were able to play off each other. They were able to get what they wanted out of the shark based on their interplay between each other. Like, that scene worked on so many levels, all over the place. And then we go to issue 1, and it's all gone. It's like, I want to see this. I want to read this comic when they're at that point. I don't want to read them starting out. Like, it's good comic, and it's, you know, 3 is still better than average, of course. You know, we'll say that whenever we give around a 2.5. But, like, I would much rather read, I think, issue 20 than issue 1. Just because I love that interplay with Pilgrim and Walker, and that half issue, I think, was my favorite of the ones that I read. But, yeah, 3, the art's good. It's perfect for this kind of comic. But, yeah, 3. Jen?
Also 3. I don't see myself buying more of this. I don't see myself following up. I was intrigued that Walker was actually, I think, Diamond?
Yeah.
And, you know, they mention, oh, Diamond had disappeared, and it looks kind of like him, but with goofy hair.
He's got, like, a mullet kind of
yeah.
thing.
Oh, yeah.
Or it's actually more like Fabio hair, really.
Yeah, it's like a...
Yeah, it's not good, whatever it is. And, you know, that was intriguing. I want to know more about his past. But at the same time, it seems like he doesn't know why he lost his powers. I don't necessarily want to accompany him on that journey to find out why. I want it to be revealed to me from him and have him have a good reason to keep a secret from me, the reader. That would be more interesting and more cool. And I don't know, like, it would give him a lot more depth rather than just, like, I'm a sad detective who used to have superpowers and now I don't. I don't know. I just... The lack of... I can't say a lack of editing. I'm sure it was edited. But the quality of editing, like, the quality control on this made me... It put a bad taste in my mouth for it. And I just... It was an okay read. I didn't feel like I wasted my time. And if, I guess, someone put the second trade in front of me and was like, read this, and be like, okay, but I don't know, it didn't stick with me in Like, it wasn't bad. Just wasn't good either. So, a 3, a little better than average.
Yeah, and you know, I'm thinking it's hard to say whether or not it's the editing, too. I mean, there's so many people who get their hands on a comic in the process of creating it. Like, you know, we were looking at that page at the end of issue 6 where it was, like, just a whole word dump at the on that page. And, like, I remember we had a similar problem with Hush. There's a page at the end of Hush where it's just Batman standing there and just word bubbles all around. Oh, he's talking to
Riddler, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like, so who knows? Maybe it's an editorial decision to make this arc 6 issues instead of 7. Like, end the story, start a new one, pick up more readers, get steam rolling, you know? Who knows? Who knows where things happened, you know? Maybe yeah. The editor made the best of a bad situation. We don't know.
But it didn't come off right. But
something around here doesn't gel the way you feel like it should. It does sometimes, like, it gets there, but then other times it's just like, oh, wait, this is getting a little sticky now. All right, David?
I'm also going to give this a 3. I had pretty high hopes for this comic because I'd heard a lot about it, and there's supposed to be a TV show coming out as well on FX.
This would be a sick cartoon, though.
Yeah.
Well, it's supposed to be a live action show.
Oh, huh. That'd be brilliant, too.
Yeah. So, to me, there was a lot of hype around this comic. So, I guess I was a little disappointed by it. Not to say that it's definitely not a bad comic. I enjoyed the 6 issues that we read, or 6.5, whatever you want to call it. But, I'm not going to, as soon as we're done recording this, read the remainder. You know, it's pretty good. I don't know if it's Bendis' strongest work. Bendis has been in the industry, like, he's been a big name in the industry for a while now, especially with all his work on the Avengers and stuff. So, you know, I think this is a good comic. If you're looking for superhero stuff, don't read this. I don't think this is a good place for you to go. If you want a different comic that doesn't talk about the same things that we all hear about, this is a good place. This is a good comic. Like I said, 3 is not a negative rating at all. It's better than average, and it certainly is better than average. So
it's a good detective comic. If you're into that genre, I would recommend this to somebody who, like, watches detective stuff.
I think I'll put this... I'll definitely go back to this at some point, but I'm not, like, super excited to go back and read it. But yeah, 3's not a bad rating at all.
No, it's better than average. Just got to keep reminding ourselves and our listeners. So anyway, next week we're going to move on with our Brian Michael Bendis arc, and we're going to read Alias, Volume 1. This is from 2001. It's issues 1 to 9, printed under the Marvel Max imprint, which is basically Marvel but with violence and cussing.
Yeah.
Which is necessary, I think, for some characters. Like, it's always a little weird when I see Wolverine in a kid's book. Like, seriously, you see, like, the little, like the comics for kids, and you got Wolverine's like, the dude has claws. Like, he's meant for ripping people open. Why is he in a kid's comic? That's what he's designed. Anyway, so Marvel Max, art by Michael Gatos. But that'll be next week. If you need more information about that comic, you can always get it on our website, which is www.atomicpoweredsupercast.com, or you can ask us more directly at our email,
which is atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
And please follow us on the social webs, which is like facebook.com/APSupercast, twitter.com/APSupercast. Just go there, interact with us, let us know what you thought about this episode. Tell us if there's something you want us to read, some favorite comic that you've got that we haven't done yet in our 2 years of doing this. Fuck, we've been doing this 2 years. God. Anyway, yeah, and as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Until next week.
Bye.
God damn it, autocorrect. Christian Walker, not Christian Wallet. What the fuck is a Christian Wallet? One with a cross on it?
Yeah.
That's legit.
You say that's legit?
Yeah. I would wear that. Use that? You don't wear it, do you?
Wear
a wallet. No.
No. You carry
a wallet. But it's an accessory. You wear accessories.
You carry a wallet.
Well, it's not an accessory.
Well, Well, it's an accessory, like a watch or shoes.
But it's not.
But if you go like, looking for it in like the Amazon shop, it would be under men's accessories. Okay. I bet you.
It's under the accessories section in like Macy's.
Yeah, it's like next to the gloves and shit.
Thing is, some people use billfolds, and other people just use a rubber band. So.
Wad of cash.
Just a fat roll of ones. Real classy.
That would be a fat roll of credit card.
Yeah, I mean, it's under clothing and accessories.
See?
But it's not,
but you don't
like,
wear it.
It's not like a earring or something.
No.
That's more like a like an accessory or a brooch.
Nice pull. I wasn't expecting to hear brooch.
Well, a brooch is like the ultimate accessory because it serves absolutely no purpose.
Yeah. Other than just like be there.
Because like what do you do with a brooch? You just pin it to your shirt, right?
I'm assuming.
It makes you fancy, I guess.
Yeah, I mean.
Well, actually, do you watch Downton Abbey? Because
no.
Maggie Smith has like this big neck scarf, like cravat like thing that she has sometimes, and I think she pins it with a brooch.
A cravat.
What's the thing that you wear at a wedding?
A boutonniere.
Yes. If you casually wore a boutonniere like to work, that I think would be the ultimate accessory.
Because there's was, literally like, just no purpose. To a, like a t-shirt or something.
Yeah, like your polo. Just go into work with a polo and a boutonniere. And be like, what? I like flowers. It smells nice.
And just smell your flower whenever, like randomly.
Yeah.
That would be the ultimate in pretentiousness.
Okay, I want to do that now.
Okay.
Can we call you a hipster?
No. Would that make me hipster if I did that?
Only if you wear it ironically.
Actually, yeah. It'd just make you weird.
That's fine. I'm already weird. I don't mind at all.
Just tell someone you're going to the prom after work.
Yes.